Prescriptions for Health with Dr. Len and Vicky Saputo, Mondays at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
Broadcast out of New York City, you're listening to Prescriptions for Health on Monday, October 10th, 2011. I'm Dr. Len Saputo.
And I'm registered nurse Vicky Saputo. And thank you for joining us on our weekly Prescriptions for Health show on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com every Monday live from 3 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time and from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And remember that our shows are archived on DrSaputo.com.
Today you're going to hear Vicky's 2020 health tips at 20 after the hour and 22 the hour. And we have another great show for you today. It's going to include the update on my doctor's experience as a patient. This is really getting to be quite interesting.
And we're going to talk a bit about Steve Jobs and also you are what you have experienced.
And one way to live longer is not to text while driving. That seems to be a lesson we should have learned by now, but we're still texting.
And can taking dietary supplements with minerals pose problems? And antioxidants can be good or bad for breast cancer and much more. So if you want to join in our conversation and you have questions about our topics or your health, you can give us a call at 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. So we promised we were going to update you again on our Dr. Saputo's health. We've been starting each of our shows the last 3 weeks or so, I guess, about what's been going on because he has a tremendous amount of pain in his hip and he has systemic symptoms as well. We found out, we talked about last week, that he has metallosis, which means that he has too much cobalt in his system. Evidently, when they make these titanium implants, they're coated with cobalt and chromium, and when the two sides rub together, it kind of flakes off and gets into your system.
It happens about 5% of the time, but what I'm really learning about is being a patient. And I have to say, this is not the best experience I've ever had in my life for a lot of reasons. You know, the treatment you get really depends on who your doctor is and what he or she learned in their training.
And finding the quote-unquote right doctor is not an easy chore. Not the right doctor for you and somebody that looks at you as a person, not just as the hip.
Yeah, well, that's
the hip
right.
Hip problem.
Well, that's right. And, you know, you really have to take time to explain to patients who want to be educated about what the doctor knows and why they're making the choices that they are. And a lot of them just really take the position, look, we're the doctors. Why can't you be a patient just like every other patient is and let us make decisions for you? Of course, my answer is never. I mean, I don't do that to my patients, and I don't expect anybody to do that to me.
Well, you know, actually, what's been going on with you is a lot more than just a hip and a lot more than metallosis because
yeah.
Your lab work is showing that there's something else going on. So we seem to have a kind of a medical mystery happening here. And just a few days ago, at the end of last week, we talked to a doctor in Seattle because mm-hmm. we heard that he would do this surgery. We thought it was the metallosis because mm-hmm. your cobalt levels were extremely high and
right.
toxic.
We spent 45 minutes having a conversation with him. The guy is really a class act. But as it turns out, as he looked over all the lab work more carefully, he said, you know, I think your doctors in your local area are right, and what you have is an infection in your hip. And until proven otherwise, I think that's how it should be managed. So I thanked him very much.
Yeah, but the white cells don't show an infection.
Well,
and the cultures, I know, but I just want people to know this, that mm-hmm. your cultures don't show an infection.
Right.
And so
the
really,
joint fluid doesn't
so
show
So what
an
they're
infection.
Doing is kind of guessing because the lab works. Some of the lab work looks like it could be that, even though your white blood cell count isn't up, which is usually indicative of an infection.
Well, that's right.
And I guess sometimes something that I learned was that sometimes the cultures don't grow out, so it might be a microbe that they don't recognize. Is that right?
Well, it could be, but, you know, I think in this particular case, with the amount of inflammation that's present, see, there are a lot of tests that we've done that look at the seriousness of what's going on in terms of inflammation in my body. And we have definitely found that there's a ton of inflammation that's hard to explain just on the basis of something going wrong with the hip surgery that was done a year ago. So we're looking for underlying problems like, could this be metastatic cancer? Could it be amyloidosis? Could it be vasculitis? And, of course, the orthopedists aren't very good at this. They just want to make sure of one thing, and that's that they don't miss an infection. Because if there's an infection in there that's occult, and they go ahead and do a hip transplant, okay, a new hip surgery to put a new implant
total
in,
hip.
A total hip, that infection gets driven into the shaft of the femur, you're looking at a really serious problem because now that infection's all over the place. So I understand that relatively paranoia that they have about that, but you also have to use your skills as a doctor, you know, as someone who's looking at what can be the answer to the question of what's wrong with me.
Well, we kind of thought that the reason that your lab work was so messed up is because of the metallosis.
Yeah, but that's not
true. But then he said that was not what the lab work was showing.
There is no condition that affects the hip that's related to a surgical procedure that's going to show inflammatory markers like I have, according to them. And I'm inclined to agree with them. But I'll tell you the truth. I'm getting tired of all these lab tests that we're doing and scans. I think it's time to not worry about doing everything perfectly.
Well, it's
I've got a great surgeon in San Francisco who's doing a great job, and he has referred me to somebody else that they will work together on. And I have great confidence that once they open this hip up and they look at it, they're going to go, oh, my God, look at that. We never thought of that.
Well, you know, another thing that we were thinking of the other day was that possibly you could have a fracture there.
There are so many possibilities that it boggles the mind. And you can do all the tests you want, and you're never going to be free of total confidence of what's going on in that hip until you look at it. You see what it looks like. Does it have the discoloration of metallosis? Is there black inflamed or bluish tissue there? Is there pus there that makes it look like it might be an infection? Or could it be something like amyloidosis or even a distant cancer?
What's amyloidosis?
That's a condition where the body makes a lot of proteins that make you age terribly fast. It's what our friend who had a hip replaced done in New York did. He died of amyloidosis, in my opinion, probably related to his hip surgery. And that was many years after his surgery was done.
Oh.
So you don't really know. And being a perfectionist, you know, is not exactly where to go. So what's the bottom line of what's happening here? There's a balance between having good doctors who will inform you of what they think is wrong with you and defend their position when you ask them lots of questions, who are willing to work with other doctors in other fields, some complementary and alternative, some mainstream, to try and develop a plan that's unique for every single person and must be learned as though it has never been seen before. This is what slowed my getting my surgery done. So this week, I'm done with testing. I think we've gone
well,
as far
as... Well, not quite.
As...
You have a PET scan today.
Well, that's it. That's it. I mean, we're going to schedule surgery as soon as we can have it. And at this point, because I know the surgeons well, we've spent lots of time talking, and I've talked to many surgeons.
I'll say.
I put myself in their hands and trust that when they get in there, they'll do the best they can do. Now, they may not be the very best in the world at what they do, but we can't have the very best.
Well, maybe
every
this
time
is one
I
of your
surgery.
Lessons is to let go and trust.
Well, there comes a time when you do need to do that, I think, because you can't be doing it all yourself.
I think what people might not know is what your symptoms have been, because, you know, we hear many times that people have total hip replacements and it's successful and they're
so
running around, they're playing tennis,
yeah.
And they're very happy that they had it done. So some of your symptoms, besides the fact that you're very, very tired, you have a lack of appetite, you've been losing weight, you have night sweats, mm-hmm. and a tremendous amount of pain in your hip
yeah,
joint.
Yeah, I don't feel well. That's right. And those are all lessons that we should look at when we look at the whole picture. And so what I'm learning about being a patient is that, yes, you have to be an advocate for yourself. Yes, you have to have a doctor who will explain things and be a teacher. And yes, you have to have a trusted relationship that you build with someone who you're putting your hands, your life in their hands.
And I think what happened was the other day when you finally decided mm-hmm. kind of what you wanted to do was you were referred to this woman that's an expert in this field.
Oh, she's
wonderful. And she has lots of connections in other countries and so forth. Mm-hmm. And so she was going to send your case to them and have them make some decisions. And when you hung up, you kind of realize, you know, I'm not just a hip. There's other things going on here, and this is something else that I need to look at. You also had, as an aside, a live blood cell analysis, which is not something that's normally done in mainstream medicine.
Right.
But I found that it was very interesting, and I think interesting enough to share with our listeners because of what happened to your blood when you took supplements after you had the live blood cell analysis. Well, first of all, they did a live blood cell analysis and showed that your cells had blue halos around them from the cobalt.
Well, not quite. Okay, what we did is we just took a drop of blood from my finger and we put it under a dark field microscope at 8,000 power. And we looked to see what that looked like. And to my surprise, well, not really to my surprise because I know I'm so inflamed, what we saw was a mass of red cells clumping together and platelets clumping together, lots of fiber in there, which means that my body is trying to wall things off. That looked awful. It looked like somebody who's really sick. And then we thought, well, is there a treatment for this? So I went ahead and took some antioxidants, some quercetin, some nattokinase, which is a powerful enzyme that
fish
has
oil, didn't you do?
A little fish oil as well, and looked at it 30 minutes later, and it was like magic. Everything had gone away. So it shows you that when you're looking at live blood, that you could see what some of the problems are that you don't really get a good picture of when you just do the routine tests that we do in the mainstream. But when you do it on live blood cell analysis, and then you test it with some kind of treatment, and you see changes, you know you're on the right track.
And how powerful that the antioxidants could do that.
Well, it's the whole thing. It's the anticoagulants, it's the antioxidants, it's the anti-inflammatories. They actually work.
Well, also, though, you said that you had these blue halos around your cells.
Well, there's another kind of live blood cell analysis that's done, and actually it's not live blood cell at all. What it is you take a drop of blood and put it on a slide, and you let it clot. And then you look at what it looks like, and there was a halo, a blue halo, that's probably cobalt, that was around all areas of that slide. So it's telling you that I don't have just one problem. There's a little metallosis. There's certainly a problem with some kind of dead tissue that's involved there, whether it's metallosis or avascular necrosis or something like that. These are all interesting things that need to be taken into perspective, along with the possibility that there's an underlying systemic illness here that's been undetected. And that's what we've been spending a lot of time spinning our wheels to try and figure out. So I've come to the conclusion that I'm ready now to put my hands in, or myself in the hands of my doctors and let them make the decisions, pay my nickel and take my chances and see what happens. But that's an informed decision. How would you all have done had you gone to the doctors I went to or to your own doctors? Do you think you'd have had a chance in hell of having the kind of rapport that I eventually developed because I know what I know? You know you wouldn't. And for some people, they don't want to go through what I went through. They want the doctor, they want to trust the doctor and believe that whatever that doctor does is going to be well thought out and the right thing. So there
Well, you had to do your own research to feel comfortable about doing it. So.
Oh, and it's a good thing I did, or else there would have been only one approach that would have been taken.
Well, you'd be on tons of antibiotics, that's for sure.
They'd have opened me up. They would have put in what's called a spacer. That's a space between the head of the femur and the pelvis. It would be very powerful in
temporary.
Terms of its antibiotics. It's temporary, and it would be in for about 8 to 12 weeks. And in the meantime, I would have been treated empirically, which means by guesswork only, with powerful antibiotics that we hoped would fight, if there was a bacteria there, would fight that bacteria. But we don't know the bacteria. We don't know the bacterial sensitivities, and we're playing Russian roulette. Now, I really don't want to do that.
So do you know what the plan is this time? We don't really know because they have to probably decide once they get in there.
Well, yes, but I found a surgeon who has depth, who doesn't just have a pony that does one show.
Mm-hmm.
He's not just stuck with putting a spacer in, antibiotics, and then a total hip maybe 3 months later. They'll look around. They'll see what they find. They may well do a revision of the Birmingham hip resurfacing I had. This is a wonderful lesson that teaches us how complicated healthcare is and how practical and impractical it is at the same time, depending on who you are, as to how your treatment goes. And as I said, for some people, it's a waste of time to try and explain to the patients what's going on because, one, they don't want to know, two, they just want to be treated, and three, they may not even understand it.
So in the meantime, we want to thank everybody that's been inquiring and caring and praying for Len and so forth.
Indeed.
So he's probably going to have the surgery this week. We don't have the date set yet or anything. I don't know if we can put a note up on the website or something if we can't do the show next Monday because people might be interested to know.
Yeah, well, unless I'm on my deathbed, we'll be doing the radio show from the hospital, which is fine. And then we can give you another stage, another report of what's happening from that point of view.
You can follow the story.
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm impressed with is the lessons, of course, that experiences like this carry with them. And what I'd have to say at this point is I would thank the universe for showing me the edge of my trust that I'm dreaming awake in an infinite universe. And if you can have that kind of positive attitude, it takes you to another dimension where you realize that you're part of one whole thing, one big universe. There's only one thing there. And learning about who you are and what's in you and how you'll respond when you have what seems to be a tragedy is really interesting. And if you can turn a lemon into lemonade, you've really done a good trick here. And that's what I'm hoping I'm doing. So you're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888. If you have a question about the story that we're talking about, or you have an interest in knowing more about how we made some of the decisions we made, or just your own story about something you went through that challenged you with a health issue, give us a call.
Or any questions about your health.
Yeah, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's first 2020 tip.
Well, if you don't read the newspaper, you're uninformed. And if you do read the newspaper, you're misinformed.
Oh, that's a great choice.
Well, I have some great truths for you here. I contend that for a nation, that was by Mark Twain. Now, this one's from Winston Churchill. I contend that for a nation to try to tax itself into prosperity is like a man standing in a bucket and trying to lift himself up by the handle.
Oh, that's great, Vicki.
Giving money and power to government is like giving whiskey and car keys to teenage boys.
Indeed.
And if you think health care is expensive now, wait until you see what it costs when it's free.
Oh, isn't that the truth? Yes.
That's from P.J. O'Rourke.
Uh-huh.
Okay, this one was by Pericles in the year 430 B.C., just because you do not take an interest in politics doesn't mean politics won't take an interest in you.
Oh, dear. I'm afraid that's true.
This one's from Mark Twain. No man's life, liberty, or property is safe while the legislature is in session.
Indeed. I guess things haven't changed that much, except maybe for the worse.
Talk is cheap, except when Congress does it.
Mm.
Indeed. The only difference between a tax man and a taxidermist is that the taxidermist leaves the skin. That's another one by Mark Twain.
Oh, that's great.
Okay, what this country needs are more unemployed politicians.
Indeed.
That was by Edward Langley. A government big enough to give you everything you want is strong enough to take everything you have.
Right on.
Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah, wow.
You cannot legislate the poor into prosperity by legislating the wealth out of prosperity.
Hmm.
The government cannot give to anybody anything that the government does not first take from somebody else.
That's right. And it's not, and this certainly isn't Robin Hood. It's the other way around.
You cannot multiply wealth by dividing it.
That's simple math.
Yeah. And when half of the people get the idea that they do not have to work because the other half is going to take care of them, and when the other half gets the idea that it does no good to work because somebody else is going to get what they work for. That's the beginning of the end of any nation.
Well, a lot of that's happening out of frustration for sure. Those are wonderful little things to think about. You know, a lot of the time we joke about things like that. We get outraged about things like that. And we get really grumpy in life. But life still goes on unless we take some kind of action. And what we think is that the action that we take needs to be big or else it doesn't count. Not realizing that every time there's change, it comes from a single thought, from a single person. And that that's where change has its birth. And if you walk your talk and act like you believe, you'll at least be doing what you can do to make a difference in what the world is like. So the lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number, if you have a question or want to enter the conversation, is 888-874-4888.
Well, unfortunately, Steve Jobs died last week at 56 years of age from complications of pancreatic cancer. And everybody has been talking about him and missing him and learning lessons from him.
Indeed.
You know, he's somebody that was born out of wedlock and he was put up for adoption. He dropped out of college. He was fired from the company that he founded, and he still changed the world.
Yeah, right. Beautiful.
And he had some quotes that I think were pretty good. He said, "Don't let the noise of others' opinions drown out your own inner voice." And he talked.
That happens so often.
And he also said, "The most important thing is to have the courage to follow your heart and intuition."
For me, it takes more courage not to follow my heart, because that really troubles me. But I understand what he's saying, and I agree with it from that perspective.
Well, he also says your work is going to fill a large part of your life, and the only way to be truly satisfied is to do what you believe is great work and keep looking until you find it and not to settle.
The culture really doesn't support that very much, you know, Vicki. What it does is it supports having a job that makes a lot of money. Maybe not be a job that you like at all.
But maybe that's why his did, because he liked it so much.
Oh, I think so. I think so. And it's not measured in monetary return either. It's measured in terms of how fulfilled you feel.
Well, evidently he felt very fulfilled. And no matter how much money he had, he still wasn't able to save his life.
Well, that just tells you that life isn't just about money. You can't throw dollars at things and expect it to change anything.
But money, I think this is a good time to talk about pancreatic cancer, because everybody's really afraid of that, and
rightfully so.
4% of the patients to survive 5 years after their diagnosis.
That's terrible.
And that's not very many.
No.
And each year, about 44,000 new cases are diagnosed just in the U.S., and 37,000 die. And half of the patients with locally advanced pancreatic cancer die within 10 months. And
it's showing you what the track record is of oncologists, okay, in this country. In general, oncologists don't take treatment for pancreatic cancer because they know it doesn't do much good. It's very unusual for something like that to work. And yet there are complementary and alternative approaches with a track record. People like Nicholas Gonzalez, who have done a lot of work on this their whole life, a guy that's out of New York, I think he's in New York City.
Yes.
Has lots of experience, has patients who have been alive 20 years with pancreatic cancer.
But we don't hear that in the media. All we hear in the media is the oncologists are held up to be like heroes because they tried their best and the patient died anyway.
Well, that's true. That's the work of Big Pharma there. I mean, they have a lot of money to promote that, and of course they have a lot to gain financially, but not much to gain karmically. In fact, they're losing a lot of ground there when they're promoting some of the things that they are, because let's face it, the treatments using chemotherapy for pancreatic cancer are expensive but do very little. Nicholas Gonzalez's work is different, but it's unfortunately classified as complementary and alternative. But that's the wrong word to use. It's the frontier science of where medicine's going. That means a lot to me. That means that we're really looking at cutting-edge new things that should be studied. And finally, after all these years, the National Institutes of Health is finally funding some of his work.
Okay, well, Steve Jobs did have some alternative therapies at the beginning.
It was a little bit odd what he chose. And I don't know who he was talking to or why he did what he was doing or his whole case story. And, of course, that makes a huge difference when you're looking at solutions, okay, and why they were picked.
Well, they said he was on a special diet.
That's a good idea. I think that a diet is a very important aspect of what happens when you have cancer. You need to be alkaline. You need to have, because acidic environments make cancers grow. You need to basically be off sugars and things that feed cancer cells. And you probably should have a diet that's high in fat. It's anti-inflammatory and has a chance of changing the metabolism around of your body so it doesn't support the growth of cancer cells so much. So diet is a much overlooked, very, very powerful tool.
And that's a lot of how Gonzalez treats people that have cancer.
That's some of it, but he's doing something that's called enzyme therapy. Mm-hmm. And it sounds ridiculous. He just gives huge doses of certain kinds of enzymes that he knows
enzymes,
about.
Enzymes, doesn't he?
Yes, but of types that he knows about and most other people don't.
He also spends time detoxifying people.
Well,
I don't
duh.
Think main,
I mean, that's a big
but
duh.
Mainstream doesn't do that.
Mainstream can't even spell the word detoxification.
And people just laugh at the idea of coffee enemas and colon cleanses, but
well, see,
this is what they do at the Gerson Clinic in Tijuana. And
well,
that
look at what they do.
I
mean, look, what does a coffee enema do? It puts a lot of coffee in a place, right in the colon, where it stimulates the bile duct and the liver to excrete bile that's toxic. So it's a coloretic agent is what it's called. And that causes the secretion of all this toxic stuff that the liver has in part detoxified, puts it into the colon, and then because coffee's in there, it causes a diarrhea. Talk to anybody after they've had a coffee enema.
They feel better.
They feel a lot better. And just because it seems odd doesn't mean that it's something that shouldn't be looked at. Detoxification is a no-brainer. How could you possibly, as a scientist, think that you're going to help somebody's healthcare condition if their sewer is blocked up? You're going to back up with all kinds of toxic things. It's common sense that a first grader would understand. Open up the sewer system. Get rid of the toxins in the body. Promote with a healthy diet. Do a healthy lifestyle. Be in the sun. Do all kinds of things that you can do to support wellness. Well, it's time for a station break. You're listening to Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Saputo here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after a short station break. I'm Dr. Len Saputo. The number is 888-874-4888 if you have a question about your health or want to enter into our conversation.
And I'm Vicki Saputo. Okay, so we were talking about Steve Jobs and how he had had 9 months of alternative therapies before he had some surgery. Mm-hmm. Now, I just wanted to bring up that 9 months on alternative therapies sounds pretty good because half of all the patients with locally advanced pancreatic cancer die within 10 months after the diagnosis.
It might be.
So anyway, so then he underwent an operation that's called a modified Whipple procedure, which is actually a very major surgery.
Yeah, they're taking out a lot of organs doing that, hoping that they can get the cells that have spread. And, of course, it hardly ever works over the long haul.
Yeah, they take out part of the pancreas, gallbladder, the stomach,
yeah,
the bile duct, the small intestines.
You don't want to do one of those.
All that kind of thing. So then after that, they said it had spread. So then he went to Switzerland, and he had an experimental procedure where they delivered radiation to the tumor cells. And it's called a peptide receptor radionuclide therapy. Okay, so that failed. So the next thing was that he had a liver transplant.
That's
a dangerous thing to have.
Well, it's just an odd thing to do. I mean, once the cancer is spread to the liver, if that was the case, see, we don't really know that, but if that's the case, then taking out a liver and putting a new one in doesn't keep the new cancer cells from going to the new liver. And in addition, you're going to be on immune-suppressing drugs that are going to make your immune system far less able to fight the cancer.
So it's more likely to spread.
Well, there must be more to the story, see, and we don't know all the story because I don't think there would be too many people who would recommend something like that. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Well, also, I was reading where the liver has an enormous regenerative capacity.
Yeah, it does.
And if they only removed a part of his liver that contained the malignant cells,
yeah, that's usually
then
what's
he wouldn't
done.
Have had to take those dangerous anti-rejection drugs.
That could be, but I think we don't know enough about the story to have an opinion here, so it's just a curious thing. I mean, maybe he had hepatitis C or some other darn thing, and his liver was failing.
Well, whatever it was, they must have been pretty desperate.
Well, indeed. You don't just do liver transplants and take them lightly.
But it was also interesting that he didn't have any chemo or radiation after his liver transplant.
Well, that actually doesn't surprise me. What would you do? I mean,
but, you know, that might have contributed to his living over 7 years after the surgery.
You'll never know why he did as well as he did or why he died, because we don't know the whole story. And until that's published, all we can do is take a few pot shots and educate our listeners to some of the aspects of what happened to him from what we do know. And that's pretty limited.
Well, you know, there are celebrity patients that we hear about, you know, that die of pancreatic cancer, like Michael Landon died from that, and
Patrick Swayze.
And is that what Steve McQueen died from?
Yep. Well, I thought
he had mesothelioma. That's what he had.
Yeah. Well,
anyway, we hear mostly about the oncology, and we don't hear much about the alternatives. And
well, understand, Vicki, that there's a big machine out there that wants to promote the status quo, and it's called Big Pharma. And they're interested in having their chemotherapy be the main treatment. They don't want some cure to come out from someplace that is a relatively inexpensive cure that will cut into their profits. And so they're adamant about doing the things that they do, and they have a lot of money to sway the public either in a positive or negative way, depending on what happens. I mean, when they start talking about huge breakthroughs in chemotherapy and the treatment of pancreatic cancer, I mean, what are they talking about? Living a few more months longer is a giant breakthrough when you're taking an expensive drug that's going to cause a lot of side effects, and then you wonder why the oncologists themselves elect not to do those treatments when they have pancreatic cancer?
And here you could do it. You could try a treatment like what Nicholas Gonzalez does.
You could try it.
He's a doctor.
There are a lot of things that you could try.
Patients are living for 20 years with pancreatic cancer.
Well, the nice part about a lot of complementary alternative therapies is
you don't feel so sick.
They're not toxic. They don't cause immune suppression. They don't kill the cells that are in your body generally. I mean, you start talking about drugs like artemisinin, like we've talked about in the past on this show.
Methyljasminate.
Yeah, these are drugs that are specifically attacking cancer cells.
Well,
and
they're not
the
drugs, they're herbs.
Well, they're chemicals just like everything else, but that's right. It's an herb. A lot of herbs are what we make drugs out of, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know that I make a huge distinction there. So you have to understand how a situation is presented before you go off and start making comments about whether it's good or bad. And when you have billions of dollars to spend on advertising the drugs that Big Pharma has, you know they're going to be very effective at making the drugs look good even when they suck, and make the new therapies that might have a chance of being good look like they're being done by people who are crackpots. So the people who are on the cutting edge of frontier science are bringing new technologies forward, and they're being penalized for it if it doesn't involve something that's going to make a lot of money, either as a technology or as a pharmaceutical drug. That's just simple business.
They call them a quack.
Well, yeah, they call you a quack because they'll do whatever they can to change your mind about what it is that you might be contemplating that doesn't involve their very expensive treatments that are usually very toxic. So there it is. Lines are open. This is Prescriptions for Health. I'm Dr. Len Sabuda here with Nurse Vicki. The number is 888-874-4888, and we'll be back taking your calls after Vicki's final 2020 tip.
October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and many people, like myself, believing it should be called Breast Cancer Prevention Month.
Indeed, there's a big difference there.
It's a good time to talk about why it's important to think before you pink.
What does that mean?
Well, Actually, I'm going to get to that.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be patient for once.
But last week I did a tip on the dangers of BPA, bisphenol A, and how it can increase the risk of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've ever bought something pink to support breast cancer research, there's a good chance that a portion of the money went to Susan G. Komen for the Cure, which is the largest nonprofit supposedly dedicated to eradicating the disease, and it's famous for its fundraising races and its pink gear and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
for fighting breast cancer.
Yeah, so they're trying to cure the disease, not prevent it.
So evidently somebody, Susan G. Komen, she died of breast cancer, and her sister started this organization.
Sure.
With very good intention, and
sure,
it's been going on for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But it might come as a surprise that Komen has dismissed links between the bisphenol A and breast cancer.
How could they do a thing like that?
They received generous donations from private industries who use BPA chemicals in their products and downplay the health concerns.
We're back to
so there's major
again.
Conflicts of interest,
we're back
just
to
like
funding.
We talk about exactly with the pharmaceutical industries and so forth.
That's a shameful thing.
And Komen denies that they're influenced by these funders.
Well, like the American Cancer Society denies its influence by the pharmaceutical industry. Another huge lie.
And more than 130 studies have linked BPA, breast cancer, and other health problems.
Wow.
And human cell cultures actually have shown that BPA has caused breast cancer cells to proliferate, and it's also reduced the effectiveness of chemotherapy. And there was a study by the California Pacific Medical Center that found that BPA even made healthy breast cells behave like cancer cells.
Wow.
And decrease the effectiveness of another breast cancer drug.
So who in the world would want BPA in their body? You'd have to be insane.
And Komen even posted online a statement saying that BPA was deemed safe.
Wow.
Isn't this terrible?
It is a disgrace.
And Komen sponsors a lot of products, and they're downplaying the link between the chemicals and cancer and saying that it isn't limited to BPA. And they also list organochlorine pesticides that includes things like DDT that say they do not increase the risk.
Oh, my gosh, just outrageous. There's so much data to support that.
That's why I wanted to talk about this.
Good
like
choice.
BPA, a lot of the pesticides have estrogen-like traits. And in 2007, there was a study that suggested that women exposed to DDT as adolescents were 5 times more likely to develop breast cancer during adulthood.
And those that are exposed, Vicki, to DDT and DDE are 5 times more sensitive to developing breast cancer.
I thought that's what I said.
You said DDT, but there's DDE
as well. Oh, okay.
And when you're exposed to both of those, you can multiply that times 5. That's how bad DDT and DDE are.
Well, there's also been tremendous resistance, on environmental issues because that cause breast cancer because there are very powerful interest groups that are lobbying against them.
Mm-hmm.
So, I started by talking about Think Before You Pink. I want you to know what pink washing is. It's when a company puts a pink ribbon on a product promising to donate some of the proceeds to breast cancer, and some of the companies manufacture products that actually increase the risk of breast cancer.
We're talking about conflicts of interest.
Now, this year, in 2011, pink washing reached a new low with Promise Me, a perfume commissioned by Susan G. Komen for the Cure. Promise Me contains unlisted chemicals that are regulated as toxic and hazardous, and they have not been adequately evaluated for human safety, and they've been demonstrated with negative health effects. Now, I could go on about this and list what they are and so forth, but I want you to know that a bottle of this Promise Me perfume is $59, and a $1.51 of proceeds goes to research.
Wow.
So this is a serious conflict of interest for Susan G. Komen to accept donations from the manufacturer of Promise Me perfume. So my suggestion is don't buy it. Use organic essential oils if you want to smell nice. And plus, they're healthy and they're healing. And there's other companies that I want you to be aware of that actually you can find out about on our website, drsaputo.com.
So where do people go to get this list of healthy skincare products? And
well,
companies.
Wait, I'm not done with this.
Okay.
So there's other companies that encourage breast cancer prevention and sponsor walks that sell products containing carcinogens that cause the breast cancer, like Estee Lauder, Avon, and Revlon. And I want you to notice the difference between walking for the cure and walking for prevention. Also that they call October Breast Cancer Awareness Month instead of Breast Cancer Prevention Month. So go to drsaputo.com to learn more, and go to Vicky's Corner. You can put up pink washing or think before you pink or just anything about that topic. And I have a lot on there about safe skincare products and things that you can put on your skin, but you don't want to use fragrances. They're not regulated by anybody.
And all this information, on drsaputo.com is 100% free. There is no charge to use the website now.
Not yet.
Yes.
So you better get there.
Get there while you can. That's right.
Done.
That's right. Eventually it has to turn a nickel somewhere. But at the moment it is totally free. It's a public service, and it has 2,000 audios and videos that you and I made ourselves, or we interviewed somebody who was an international expert on a wide range of healthcare subjects. So go play. DrSaputo.com is a wonderful place to get your healthcare information from an integrative and holistic point of view.
You know, since we've been talking about cancer, maybe we ought to talk about this article that just came out. I mean, it's a good idea to take antioxidants if you have breast cancer. That's the question. So this study shows that breast cancer patients who take antioxidants might have an increased or a decreased risk of death or recurrent cancer depending on which vitamin they use.
Yeah.
So what's good and what's not?
Well, see, I don't like looking at it that way, so I'm going to dodge your question a little bit. I know the answer, but I think that what we should not be doing is relying on anything that's a supplement or is a product, okay? Before we have practiced a healthy lifestyle. If you eat a healthy diet, you're going to have those berries of different kinds and fruits and seeds and nuts and herbs and spices that your body has to have in order to be healthy. And if you exercise regularly, you're going to detox like you should. And if you sleep well, you're going to be at peace, and you're going to have all those endorphins cleansing your body and making it feel good. And if you weigh what you should, you're not going to be carrying around more of a load than you need and causing problems that lead to lots of illnesses like hypertension, diabetes, heart attack, strokes. So those are the kinds of things that are always first.
Well, the other thing is, too, is that cancer cells are stored in our fat. So the fatter you are, you probably have more.
Actually, not the cancer cells.
I mean toxins are stored in our fat.
Toxins are stored in the fat. That's
right. They cause the cancer.
So, yes, there are some antioxidants that are not smart to take. And there are some that might be useful. I mean, the study showed that if you take substantial amounts of vitamin C and E, your risk of getting breast cancer or of it progressing is lower. Yet if you use the beta carotenes, the risk is slightly higher that you'll die prematurely. So basically, the body is too smart for us. It knows a lot more than we do. And we start messing around either with drugs or supplements or herbs or whatever it is that we're doing, we're entering into an area where we do not have sufficient information to know that the effects that we have on cell biochemistry are going to be positive. What we do know that works is don't pollute your environment. Follow all the lifestyle things that are healthy. And chances are if you're living with nature in a way that's consistent with how nature wants to live with you, you're probably going to be very healthy. You have to do a lot of things to get cancer. A lot of things to get cancer. And actually, there's a book that came out that was written by Raymond Francis that says, Never Fear Cancer Again, How to Prevent and Reverse Cancer, that I highly recommend. And the reason that I do is because Raymond understands a lot of things about what causes cancer and what you have to do to be able to get it and what you can do to restore back to normal once you have it.
Now, I'm not saying that this is a cure. There's so many toxins in our environment.
Listen, we know all that. But if you want an overview and you have cancer and you'd like to see things other than are written in the mainstream pharmaceutical literature, a book like Never Fear Cancer Again, which is on Amazon.com, written by Raymond Francis, is a very good choice. I've looked this over, and I know Raymond well. And it's not like I agree with all the things that he says about a lot of other issues, but the stuff in this book should make you think, and it may help you to do something that's more natural to ensure that you recover from your cancer.
Well, our diet definitely is important.
No, it's huge. What you put in your body is an amazing thing.
We were just reading an article about a healthy diet can prevent birth defects even.
Well, it shouldn't be any surprise. I can guarantee you that if you don't take in enough of the right nutrients, that your body will not be able to make the products that it requires.
Particularly folic acid and iron if a woman's thinking
about
even getting pregnant.
Well, it's not just those, it's all of them. There's 55 essential nutrients. Any of them that we're short in, essential fatty acids, magnesium, copper, zinc, boron, silica, there are 55 of those that we know of, and I don't know how many others there are that we don't know of, that are absolutely vital. And if they're not there, you can't make a product out of thin air. I'm sorry. You have to take in the raw materials. So diet becomes much underrated. When you go to an oncologist and they say, eat what you want, go ahead and have a candy bar and have a, you know, an ice cream sundae and go have a big steak, you know, when you're done with it. That's not, that's just idiotic. It's idiotic. It's nonsensical. It makes no sense. How could you be so really stupid as to make a comment like that when you know these things have things in them that are toxic, that promote the development of cancer and might make it flare? Why not eat the things that cancers don't like? Why not have a diet that's high in coconut oil or other saturated fats that are medium-chain triglycerides? Because cancer cells don't have very many healthy mitochondria. They can't metabolize fat. But you fill it full of sugar and high fructose corn syrup and any other things that are sweet, they're going to say, thank you very much. It's exactly what I needed to grow. Use your common sense. And if you don't know what you're talking about, because you don't have a background in nutrition, keep your bloody mouth shut, because you're putting the wrong information out there. And that, to me, is a crime. It's having an opinion based on insufficient knowledge and naive arrogance that somehow you know something without having to study it. That's just total BS.
Well, you know, too, that there's a new study that shows inflammatory food toxins that are found in high levels in infants.
Yeah.
But, you know, so it's like before they're even born. And it's really not a surprise, actually. I was thinking about this. We usually think of high sugar increasing the risk of diabetes.
Yeah.
And this study shows that infants' risk for diabetes is increased not only from their mother's diet, but from infant formula that's loaded with sugar. But then the surprise is that the risk is increased really due to the commercial baby formulas being processed under high heat.
It's the heat that screws things up, and it forms these advanced glycation end products. They're called AGEs that cause a lot of damage in the body. We know that these AGE products occur in people who are diabetics. When your blood sugar goes above about 170, sugar gets converted to sorbitol because an enzyme called aldose reductase becomes activated that converts sugar into sorbitol. And sorbitol is an AGE that poisons proteins and poisons enzymes and nerves and other tissues that you just don't want.
I was thinking that maybe the fact that the formula is pasteurized.
That's right, Vicki. Or if something else is fried or heated to high temperature.
The mother's eating processed, grilled, yeah, fried.
If the
foods.
Mom eats that and it produces a lot of AGEs, then it's going to be transferred across the placenta to the baby.
You know, I've been finding it's almost even impossible to find a fruit juice that hasn't been pasteurized.
Oh, absolutely. What we should be
and
doing.
And nuts. Now they're even doing it with nuts.
What we should
it's
be
nuts.
Doing is turning down the heat, adding water, and eat more often at home. And you won't have this problem because you'll be eating a lot of things that won't be overheated, won't be fried, won't be baked too much.
And you'll know
and
how
you
it's prepared.
And you won't have the AGEs. What?
You'll know how it's prepared.
Well,
if you
yeah,
do it
you
yourself.
Prepare that yourself.
But a lot of people like to zap it in the microwave, though. That's the problem.
Well, another convenient thing that causes insulin resistance and diabetes later in life. So all these AGE products that are formed by heating good foods to high temperatures creates a high risk for the population to develop lots of conditions where we age too fast, in particular, type 2 diabetes.
Okay, another article that just came out this week that fits in with all these topics
uh-huh.
is about can you overdo dietary supplements or will more make you more healthy? Because these dietary supplements to boost your intake of minerals may actually be too much of a good thing and even risk serious problems. What can happen? Like if you have too much iron, for example.
Oh, well, iron we know is something that causes a lot of oxidation. If you have the recessive gene for hemochromatosis, which is a disease where there's too much iron in the body, you age too fast, you develop liver disease, you have premature heart attacks and strokes, you're at risk for developing diabetes.
Cancer.
Yeah, and cancer, absolutely, and infections. So all this thing, all these things about supplements have to be very careful about. I don't think we should just willy-nilly go out and take a bunch of supplements. We should willy-nilly be going out and eating a healthy diet. Fruits and vegetables, seeds and nuts, herbs and spices. That should be in all of our meals. And in general, when you look at people who are taking a lot of minerals or antioxidants or products like that, what's happening is that you're looking at the healthy user effect, which means these are the people that eat good diets, too, and they want to top it off with some supplements.
They probably need it even less.
They need it less.
They're trying to do a really extra good job.
Right. And so we can go overboard with things like iron, and calcium's another one.
Yeah, kidney stones and
ASHG. Well, if you take too many supplements, you're at risk for kidney stones. But if you eat a lot of iron that's in food, doesn't happen at all. It's actually quite good for you. And if you supplement too much with calcium, you may be helping prevent the risk of osteoporosis, but you may be increasing the risk of heart attacks and strokes because that calcium, when it's in large amounts, gets deposited where? Into the soft tissues like the arteries, where it later causes heart attacks and strokes. So you have to think, you know, before you get into doing too many things. Life doesn't have to be complicated. We could look at some of the things we do if they're lifestyle oriented as really positive things that help us to not get sick and to build up healthy reserves, so our immune systems are strong and our bodies are strong because we've exercised them and we've detoxed because of that. And if you can do that in combination with getting away from what we've done to the planet in terms of pollution, it's a major thing. It's a major change in the way that we would exist on this planet. It would be like it was 100 years ago. If you got to be age 50 100 years ago, you were healthier than somebody age 50 today, and you'd live just as long. It was the childhood illnesses, the epidemics of smallpox, you know, bubonic plague, all that stuff, that caused early deaths that said, yeah, the average lifespan is only like 49 or 45 years old. But you have to look at the numbers of what you're measuring and not get confused by it. So dietary supplements, can they hurt? Yes. Are there times for them? Absolutely.
Prenatal vitamins are a good idea.
That's one, but I use them in my practice.
Yeah.
Would I rather use a drug or a technology that has a chance for some kind of complicated thing? Of course not.
Well, just like what you were talking about at the top of the show, when you took the fish oil and some nanokinase and so forth, it totally changed your blood.
Analysis blew me away. Because you saw all these clots and crud that was in there all dissolve, and the blood was normal. It could oxygenate better. It was more fluid. It was less viscid. It was less likely to cause a clot that could lead to a heart attack or a stroke. You have to be so clever about life and recognize that we don't know that much, and we make a lot of assumptions about the kinds of things that we do in life that are just wrong. And that's when we get into the technology of what we do in healthcare as being what we need. I need that Prozac. I need that sleeping pill. Yeah. So anyway, we're done with another show. And I'd like to remind you that we'll be back live to talk about what's new in the news in health and to take your health questions every Monday afternoon on PRN.com and DrSaputo.com from 3 to 4 Eastern Standard Time and 12 to 1 Pacific Standard Time. They'll also be archived on drsaputo.com.
And remember that lifestyle is the most powerful healer in the universe. So if you want to be well, pay attention to the style in which you live your life.
And have a wonderful week. Thanks for listening.